Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
As entrepreneurs, we know the value of good branding. From social media to blog post images, solid branding makes us stand out from competitors, increases the perceived value to our customers, and it adds another level of professionalism to our businesses. But it's not easy for people like you and I that aren't designers. Luckily, Snappa was built to make graphic design easy for entrepreneurs to up their branding game. Go to snappa.io/hack and make 2017 the year that you start looking like the real business that you are. Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a fashion designer, intimate apparel expert, and an entrepreneur. As a true serial entrepreneur, my guest, as you will hear, has been hustling and starting businesses since she was a kid. And after spending some time in the fashion industry, my guest founded Charmed, a junior undergarment company. Charmed was then acquired by Maiden Form in 2011. In 2014, my guest founded Jewel Tone, a lingerie and shapewear product developer, designer, and manufacturer. In 2014, Jewel Tone received seed round funding of $185,000. And in March 2015, they received their second round at $600,000. Now, let's hack Rachel McCrary. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Snappa, the fastest way for entrepreneurs to create graphics. Getting your business up and running is hard, and growing it is another hurdle altogether. It seems like we never have enough time to do all the things that we know we should be doing in our businesses. The things that matter. The things that will help us stand out and grow. Creating awesome Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Pinterest images can and will allow your business and message to go wide and find your true fans. But creating images that look great and getting shared is hard, and it's time-consuming. Whether you need a blog post image, a social media post, or even a complete infographic, Snappa saves you time every step of the way. Think of how long it took you to create an image for your last blog post. Here's how it works with Snappa. You start with the perfect image dimensions, perfectly sized in one click. Then you get a head start with pre-made templates. Just stop staring at that blank screen. Then you find free high-resolution stock photos right inside of Snappa. Then you add text, graphics, and effects in seconds. Literally, even for somebody like me. Then you schedule and share your graphics instantly on social media, completely without leaving Snappa. Done. Now you get back to running your business. Snappa was built to make graphic design easy for entrepreneurs. Right now, I have a special offer. Go to snappa.io/hack and make 2017 the year you start looking like the real business that you are. Stop wasting time. Use Snappa. Go to snappa.io/hack and you'll get a 14-day free trial without even using a credit card. That's snappa.io/hack. We're back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have another very, very special guest. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Welcome. Thanks so much for having me. Good morning.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for joining me. So Rachel, can you tell me, as an entrepreneur, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I think there's a couple of things that contribute to my success. One being that I am an executor and not just an idea person. I typically say that an idea is not worth anything. Your execution of it is. At any time when we have an idea, maybe 1,000 people on the planet also had the same idea that day. But it's your ability to go straight into action mode and start doing instead of just talking about it. That would be one. Another one would be, let me see. I'm not a marinator. I move, you know, into doing. Like, I don't hum and haw over decisions. I sort of like pick one, whatever feels intuitively the best or, you know, statistically the best, and just go with it and stick to my decisions. unless I see a reason otherwise, of course. So yeah, that I think that'd be a couple of things.
I love it. And so this idea of like ideas aren't worth anything. It's all the execution that you do. Like, do you feel that you could almost execute on any sort of valid idea and with your just persistence and drive, make it succeed?
My particular idea?
Yeah. Like when you say ideas are worthless, like could you almost take any idea and just execute it so hard that it would eventually succeed?
No, I think that one would need the skill set for said idea. You know, like people always say, you know, like Romeo and Michelle and like the Post-it thing, right? But whoever actually did invent the Post-it, you know, I'm sure that there was some type of execution process there and some knowledge base they had. And if not, they researched it and were resourceful and figured it out, you know, whereas that one might be more simple for you know, a lot of people to be able to figure out or either gain the knowledge and the resources to do so. But other things like, say, you know, software or apparel manufacturing, it would take some skill set in the implementation of it.
Okay. So there's got to be like a cross section between the idea, between what your skills are and then basically you deciding to stop thinking about it and actually executing on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So you're with Jewel Toned now, but this isn't like your first business you've started. So can we go back? Because there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life when they've realized that they either had this calling to make this difference in the world or they just found that they couldn't work for somebody else anymore. So can you kind of take us back to when you discovered this about yourself?
I think I was about 12. I wanted to move to New York and work in the fashion industry. Of course, my parents said, well, my segue into that is I wanted to go to boarding school, you know, and focus on fashion. Of course, they said no. When I was about 15, 16, 17, I was a model, was more interested in the behind the scenes of the fashion show than being in the fashion show. Asked the people that put it on if they would mentor me. I started designing my own clothing right away and selling it into stores. Like I would just make some dresses and go to the stores and ask if they would sell them there. In hindsight, I'm sure they laughed when they came in. but I think, you know, there was never a question of, you know, do I, you know, I have to go to school and then get a job. Like it was just kind of like, I want to do this, so I'm just going to start doing it now. I've never really been one for really playing by the rules. You know, I was difficult in high school. If I liked my teachers and respected them, you know, I completely did everything that they ever told me and sort of like worshiped them and was, you know, straight A student. If I didn't respect the professor or the teacher in high school and college, then we had an issue because I just didn't understand why I had to do what they said if I didn't agree with their like systems, you know?
Fair enough.
I mean, I don't necessarily like advise that sort of method of thinking. But, you know, I had a very early understanding of, but why, but I don't understand and just sort of questioning everything and like, why do I have to do it this way? And, you know, I found some balance in that, you know, once I had a career in New York of, you know, you need to have balance of process and rules, you know, and then also have a certain level of going at things your own way so that you don't, you know, rock the boat and hurt other people and things like that too much, but you're still, you know, being outside the box a little.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And so you did actually end up moving to New York.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How far after 12? how long did you have to wait to like realize that dream?
Yeah, I actually moved to San Francisco first. I moved to San Francisco when I was 18, I think, and went to fashion school there. I think it was a combination of I sort of fall in love with the FITM campus in San Francisco. It's in a skyscraper, and I just think it would be cool to go to college like on the top three floors of a very tall building. And I really enjoyed like whenever I went to tour schools, like I sort of liked that one the best. And then I also started dating like a software engineer at Apple. So of course, it always goes back to being boy crazy, right? So I moved to San Francisco first, went to college there, and then I moved to New York. I think I was probably 22.
Wow. And then from that, you went to work for other companies as a designer, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then at what point did you sort of step out and start your first business? Or what was your first business?
I mean, my first business was selling mini dresses in high school. And I also redesigned some merch and created a profitable merch business in the 90s.
Wow.
Hand screening t-shirts for bands. And then I would make more money than the bands at the show, even though I wasn't old enough to go into the bar. So those were technically my first businesses. Low overhead.
That's awesome. At your parents' house.
But let's see. I started making merch for bands again in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, you know, sort of like some local New York bands. And then I made some merch for some larger companies, but I made it like I designed it. Like I wasn't like screening on t-shirts. Like I had it like all, I did the patterns and like had it all like cut and sewed like specifically for them. And, you know, it wasn't just t-shirts and things like that. And then I created a junior brand called Charmed that was enveloped underneath sort of the Made in Form portfolio of brands at the time. It was like a junior bra brand, you know, for maybe 15 to 25 year old customer. And then I had several different consulting businesses. I had a life coaching business and was a life coach in another life.
Fair enough. You have some serious hustle to you, it seems.
I've heard.
So let's go from band merchandise to like junior bra company. Mm. What makes that transition possible?
Some of the band merch was actually undies. So I would make, you know, like underwear. So yeah. it's not like that weird. And then my first job in New York, I was a temp at Victoria's Secret, I think 5 days after being in New York City. And then I, you know, loved the details. So, you know, started working as a designer at a different intimate apparel company for a long time. And, you know, just did that at various undies companies for about a decade. Became a corporate executive in the underwear business, you know, and I've always just loved it. Like I love the curve of women's bodies and I love the details of lingerie. There's, you know, 26 components to a bra oftentimes. Most people don't know that. And there's just so much that goes into it. And it's difficult to fit them properly. And I really enjoy the process. Whenever you give a woman a bra that she loves, you know, she'll remember it and you forever. So it's a very important thing.
So I'm assuming this is the evolution that led to Jewel Toned.
Yes. Yes. I was talking to women, just models and buyers and all different types of women from all walks of life and focus groups and everything from people's nieces to, you know, my bosses and just noticed that when women talked about certain categories within the intimate apparel umbrella, it made them feel bad about themselves. So whenever they would talk about buying shapewear, they would either apologize for wearing it or be proud of the fact if they didn't wear it. And like, you know, and I'm like, well, why is that? Because for a fashion designer, it's a foundation garment. It has nothing to do with like whether or not you are look the perfect size and you don't quote need it, you know? So a lot of dresses and things like that just truly require a foundation garment. And these days, the same thing goes for casual clothing, like vintage tees, really thin fabrics. Everything's hanging off the shoulder. Everything's got holes in it, laser cut, lace, crochet, whatever. So you need something to go on underneath. I mean, you don't have to, but most people are always looking for something. And if you wear a cami and a bra, it sort of creates this mess of like multiple straps and everything's sort of shifting around. So I wanted to create garments that solves wardrobe malfunctions and issues that women had. A lot of women have things in their closet, like a wrap dress or something sheer. And whenever you purchase it, you're like, oh, I'll get something to go with this later. And then you never do. So I wanted to create a solution that expanded their wardrobe and was a little bit different than what anyone else was offering. And no one was really offering like a slip with a built-in bra that held you in a little bit that didn't look like underwear. So it could be, you could, if you see it, it doesn't look like something you're not supposed to see. It can even be worn as outerwear. So that's sort of where the Jewel Tone mindset came in.
And so it was like you found a gap in the market, like for the product, but between, it was probably about 3 to 4 years from when you started Charmed, mm-hmm. and that went into the Made in Form sort of umbrella or whatever. But the idea of e-commerce and selling online as a sole like distributor, had kind of really evolved quickly between those two like points in time, right? Even though it's a short amount of time. So although you found a gap in the market for the product, was there any apprehension with the fact that you could sell it through the internet?
Was I hesitant to sell it through the internet, or did that encourage
did you feel like although you knew the product and you knew the market and you knew you could create this, did you feel like maybe there was something missing where you didn't know how to make that connection to sell through the internet?
No.
No?
I just learned how to sell through the internet.
That's awesome. this is usually what stops most people right there. I can't do it, or else they try and find a partner who can do it. You're just like, no, I just learned how to do it.
I mean, I remember...
People don't think like that. I just want you to know.
Really?
I've interviewed hundreds of people. They don't just really think like that.
I remember in about a year where I was at one of my corporate jobs and I was responsible for social media for the brands that I was working on. And because that's how small it was. Social media wasn't a whole division yet within companies, which of course now it is. But I remember at the beginning, we were in some meeting and they were like, oh, should we have a Twitter for the brand? And under a year, it was like, if you don't have a Twitter, you're not a thing, you know?
Yeah, I know.
So
it's crazy.
And now it's just inherently how you talk to your customer and part of that process. So I guess sort of being involved in that from the beginning, you know? And then I think if you don't, not that as your business grows that you shouldn't have someone that, you know, has more of an expertise or degree in whatever it is, you know, that you're learning. But, you know, you really need to have your head in it in order to have a really decent understanding of how your own business works, no?
Yeah, you do. Exactly. And that's why I was wondering how you sort of overcame that. So if I recall correctly, you had the idea and then you got funding for the idea, did you not, for the business?
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of created the team around it with the funding and then went to market.
I went to market actually before I got any funding, to be clear about that.
Yes. Cool.
And for most people that are seeking funding, you know, there are other types of businesses that where proof of concept might not be possible because the cost might be so exorbitant in order to get there that it would be different. So, you know, there's no absolutes. Like it differs from, you know, business to business. But for consumer businesses, I think it's definitely necessary for you to create a proof of concepts in order to get investors to pay attention to you. There are some investors that invest pre-revenue, but, you know, they're set up for that. But, you know, most don't, or maybe an incubator or something. But I think you would really need to ace that pitch in the hole and kind of know every aspect of it and way past just an idea and have a lot of data, even if you didn't have proof of concept yet. But I had this idea a few years ago. I had a business partner before when I created Charmed. And unfortunately, she passed away from breast cancer. And the day before she died, she was talking to me about this. And she was just like, you know, that junior shapewear idea that you have, you should do that. And don't do it underneath, you know, a big corporate company because, you know, all that stuff that you're always doing on your phone, like that'll all get filtered by a corporate brand. So do it on your own. Because no one will stop you from going 100 miles an hour if you know, you just do it on your own. So, and I really always wanted to, you know, start my own bigger, like sort of real company, you know? So yeah, so I made the products and started selling them on Instagram and had, I don't know, maybe 10,000 in revenue when I did my first pitch. I mean, it's not a ton, but it's you're just proving, hey, somebody out there is going to buy this thing that I made, you know? Which is more valuable than someone might, right?
Yeah.
So I did that and I started pitching. I won some pitch competitions. I did an angel round of funding and then a VC round of a seed round. And then built out a, you know, we're still small over here. It's a lot of hustle and everyone wears many hats, but, you know, built out a little bit of a team so we could grow a little bit and have a CTO that made our website better than what I made to begin with. but mostly we do everything. I mean, all of us hands-on. Anytime there's like a photo shoot or an event, you know, it's all hands on deck. No one's a princess. Everyone does everything from, you know, hold the dog and take out the trash to, you know, go to buyer and investor meetings and organize everything. I don't really, agree with the, oh, I don't really know, so-and-so does that part of the business. Whenever you're like under, you know, 10 employees, I think while that's true and everyone has a designated, you know, major role, everyone should sort of know what's going on in order for it to function properly.
Yeah.
And to create systems and process, right? So that if someone is sick or whatever, it's not just relying on the person and there's somewhat of a process.
Yeah, totally. And that totally makes sense. And that you, I mean, especially when you're getting going and started, like you have to kind of be able to do everything. But are there, like, is there something in your business that you feel that you're noticeably not good at that you need other people to do?
Yes.
What would that be?
Like being the CFO.
Fair enough.
You know, big trouble if I'm the one that, you know, as far as like spending and all that, I'm extremely conservative, but compiling all of that information and, you know, I can definitely do a decent P&L, pro forma, you know, expenses, tax, that kind of thing. No problem. But those, the crazy, crazy, crazy 16, 23 page, you know, either for the past or pro forma is definitely not my forte. I'm not a numbers person. I think I'm even like a little bit dyslexic. Like it just, my brain moves things around and it doesn't, it's just, I feel tired like when I do it too. It's like I can do it if I get laser focused and like, okay, we're going to like roll up our sleeves and like focus on this for the next 12 hours. But, you know, and I will always be involved, but that's something that we're definitely taking off of my plate now because it's better served under someone who can zip right through and be more, have it be more beneficial to the company and better served than myself.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So at the like earlier on, you just said how you got your first 10,000 in revenue from Instagram. Mm-hmm. 3 years into it now, and through a round of funding, possibly two. But how or what is something that's working really well right now to drive revenue in the business?
Talking to our customers organically. We don't talk down to them from like a high level fashion branding perspective. We are just like, hey girl, we're just like you. These are the girls that work in our office. We're easy to find out there. These are the problems that we experience, you know, getting ready. This is how our friends feel about it. This is what we've said to us. And we have an open dialogue. So people do find us and reach out and send us emails about their experiences, whether it's by our products or other products, you know, and what they love about. They send us pictures sometimes than our products. They definitely tell us what they don't like about our products and how we can improve, which we're always open to hearing. We're new. There's always room for improvement in the next iterations, right? You know, and just we're very transparent. We let them know we're a small company. We're not trying to be, you know, we're not trying to claim that we're as big as VS. You know, we're here. Talk to us. Tell us how we should grow and what products you want to see.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you're not trying to be bigger, like show that you're bigger than you are. Because I think that really helps sort of humanize the brand and then make that connection. And then you said you make that connection sort of through email, or are you guys like outreaching and kind of reaching out into conversations in social media?
We reach out on social media. They just find us on email, which we're fine with. You can contact us through our website or I mean, we're all on, you know, LinkedIn or wherever you can find us. It's not that hard. And then we are out there in public a lot, you know, at women's events and conferences and things like that, mostly in LA and New York. You know, and just, you know, talk to women all the time. We'd like to support other women entrepreneurs, you know, so we have a network of those. So yeah, we're just out and about.
Cool. And heading into the new year, we're right at like the last week or so of 2016. How much do you guys plan ahead for 2017? Is it on a yearly basis or a quarterly basis? Like, are you setting goals or sprints, or what are you guys doing to kind of set yourself up to kick ass in the year?
Probably on a quarterly basis. We, you know, things move pretty fast around here. And if we plan too far in advance, we find that by the time we get there, things look a lot different. We're focused on different things. So it might not be relevant anymore. I'd say one thing that I've learned is to, you know, don't plan too much in the future because it might not look like how you think it's going to look. And don't spend too much time in meetings for, you know, oh, well, when we get this, what if we have this problem then? But shouldn't we do this? Because if when we have a person, well, you don't have any of that now. So run your business with how you have it today, you know, and don't plan too much when you're this early because it can change, you know, drastically.
I love it. It's a freaking great attitude. All right. This has been a lot of fun, Rachel. We've got to talk about Jewel Toned sort of in passing. Can you sort of give the pitch and then tell everyone where they can track you down online?
Yeah. Jewel Toned is the first body positive lingerie and shapewear company made by women. We are globally enhancing confidence for women all over the world by creating undies that make them feel good about themselves. And we market them to women instead of men. And they're, you know, one of the first intimates brands to be both extremely comfortable and sexy. Our website is shopjeweltone.com. If you put Jewel Toned into Google, most of our social media and places to find us show up. And we're Jewel Toned on Twitter and Instagram.
Very cool. At Jewel Toned on Twitter, Instagram. I'll track down the other social media for you and put it in the show notes. Shop Jewel Toned is the main site. And yeah, it's been fun, Rachel. Thanks so much for stopping by. Thanks for sharing with the audience. And please just keep doing what you're doing because it's awesome.
Thanks so much, Sean. You too.
That was a lot of fun. These conversations, I always enjoy them for the business aspect of them. And it seems like a lot of times I've had drummers on, I've had software entrepreneurs on, I've had construction entrepreneurs, things that I've done and have a background in. We start talking like intimate apparel, I get kind of out of my element. It's like talking sports, but it was a fun conversation. And so it was interesting and it was fun to go through it. Rachel's a smart, smart entrepreneur who's done some really, really cool things. And so to be part of it was fun and pushed me, I guess, out of my element and then back into it. But getting to go back now at this point and listening to it again, it's interesting. It's interesting to hear it from your perspective. And so I went back and then I went back again and then I went back one more time. As I went through that third time through the conversation, there was one thing that Rachel said that was so very clear. It was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I went to market actually before I got any funding, to be clear about that. And for most people that are seeking funding, you know, there are other types of businesses that where proof of concept might not be possible because the cost might be so exorbitant in order to get there that it would be different. So, you know, there's no absolutes. Like it differs from you know, business to business. But for consumer businesses, I think it's definitely necessary for you to create a proof of concepts in order to get investors to pay attention to you.
And that's the hack. Rachel, I love this. I love that you completely corrected me. And because I said that you got funding before you went to market, which you didn't. But I love how you talk about consumer products, right? So you're out there listening and you want to create some form of consumer product. So whether that's apparel, some sort of clothing, bicycles, or a new musical instrument, or a tennis racket, whatever it happens to be, the idea of getting funding before creating a proof of concept and taking it to market, Rachel has experience getting funding, and she's just told you that you need that proof of concept first. Obviously, there's gray areas and there's always going to be extreme examples where you could get funding first, but typically you need to go to market first. You need to create the product yourself and you need to have some sort of money. Luckily now there's crowdsourcing, right? Crowdsourcing is a great way that you can use an audience or use whatever crowdsourcing platform you want. There's endless ones out there now to sort of sell the idea of the product first. Lots of people do this with suitcases, with a clothing again, any books, all kinds of things where you sell the concept of it and then people will fund you to build the proof of concept. You then provide it to them and then you could go get further funding if you want to take it further. But if you have an idea for taking something to market that is in that consumer space, don't think about funding now. Don't plan on trying to acquire funding now. You need to find a way to personally get the product and take it to market yourself. Then, as Rachel did, you can then go, like Rachel did, she got a fairly reasonable amount, $185,000 first for her funding after she had gone to market. And then a year later, she got another $600,000. So, which allows her to sort of expand, grow, and take it further. But the idea being that to go to consumer, you have to take it to market first. And I appreciate, Rachel, you for sharing that and for clarifying and just setting me straight. All right. That was a lot of fun. It's been good. We're back. We're back. It's a new year. It's a new 300s of episodes. It's fun. It's fun, isn't it? HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the website. Make sure you stop by there. We have some big plans for the new year. I'm going to start writing a lot more on there and providing you some cool stuff that I think is going to help you take your businesses to some really cool places in this 2017. So yeah, stop by HackTheEntrepreneur.com. Rachel will be there, her show notes. I'll get links to her store, her business, and to her on social media and anything else we've discussed here today. Yeah, it's been fun. Thank you so much for stopping by. I 100% appreciate it. I wish you the best of Januarys and years. And until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.